right, Lance. Welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. And we're going to get right on into our commentary here. This week's commentary is Plants Make the Planet Habitable. Plants, organized into communities and arrayed across landscapes, make the planet habitable. This is particularly true of relatively undisturbed large natural forest expanses. A recent study in Science reiterates this point, attributing current climate and animal diversity to colonization of land by plants, which they conclude may have occurred earlier than previously thought. Human-induced widespread destruction and diminishment of natural vegetation threatens to significantly impair the operation of Earth's ecological systems. The global ecological fabric has been and continues to be so ripped asunder that it is an open question whether global plant distribution and conditions are adequate to continue maintaining atmospheric integrity, cycling water, maintaining soils, and producing useful products. The world's remaining wildlands are critically important to their indigenous populations, to the global, regional, and local ecological sustainability. Only in large, intact ecosystems can the natural, biological, ecological, and evolutionary functions of plant communities continue undiminished. Less than a quarter of the world's pre-agricultural forest extent has not been diminished or lost, and most of what remains is threatened. The Earth has likely already lost too much natural vegetation for the planet's ecological functions and current conditions to be sustained in the long term, barring major ecological restoration. Historically, natural plant assemblages provided the life-giving context for human societies. In many ecoregions, and soon to be most, natural plant communities are surrounded by human constructs and are so fragmented that they are hard-pressed to maintain themselves and their ecological functions. The area of commercial development of large old-growth ecosystems are relatively untrammeled by the activities of modern humankind must come to an end, and the era of landscape-level protection, management, and restoration commenced. Given the perilous state of Earth's vegetation and global requirements for ecological sustainability, it is essential that most remaining forests be protected as global ecological reserves. Maintaining most remaining natural vegetation in an intact state and using this as stock to restore and regenerate degraded landscapes is a planetary imperative. Given the level of threat posed to human security and indeed survival by decline of biological systems, this will require massive funding primarily in the overdeveloped nations to compensate affected governments and human communities and assist in the transformation to ecological sustainability. An important component of sustaining global vegetation will be fostering benign management of regenerating forests. Forest.org wholeheartedly supports forest certification as one means to do so. However, remaining old-growth forests are so valuable ecologically in terms of their species and genes as a blueprint for future restoration and for their local, regional, and global ecosystem outputs that certified commercial logging of the Earth's few remaining large regional forest wildlands is inappropriate. Commercial-scale logging inevitably significantly diminishes forests when they are intensively logged for the first time. Certified logging permanently alters forests ecologically, including the composition and relative quantities of plants. In terms of forest conservation benefits, certification is not a replacement for extensive protection of most of the world's remaining forest wildlands. Extensive commercial logging of the world's remaining old-growth forests is unworthy of certification as being green. Doing so gives a false assurance of environmental acceptability to consumers, while legitimizing commercial logging of the world's remaining forest wildernesses by multinational companies. Given the extremely high conservation value of all remaining old-growth forests, the assumption should be that, in every case, they are to be strictly protected, with certified management being the carefully prescribed exception. As the certification scheme that claims high levels of environmental rigorousness, the Forest Stewardship Council, or FSC, has a special responsibility not to allow certification of commercial logging of old-growth forests. FSC's principles that enunciate the conditions under which old-growth can be logged are woefully inadequate. In most cases, they ultimately permit industrial-scale logging and require only 10% conservation set-asides. To demonstrate the merit of their green seal of environmental acceptability, FSC's principles must be revised to ensure that certification of old-growth forests only occurs at scales and using methods that ensure upscale ecological forest sustainability. Certified harvest of any portion of the world's remaining old-growth forest wildlands is only appropriate if 1. Carried out by local peoples to meet their local needs. 2. Such harvest is composed entirely of small and medium-scale local production that strives for ecological sustainability. And 3. Management occurs within the context of much larger, strictly protected areas. Forest.org strongly endorses forest certification in secondary forests and certification of appropriately scaled ecoforestry by local peoples in primary forests. There is nothing green about commercial logging of old-growth forests. Forest.org's old-growth campaign, which will be intensified in coming months, holds the following basic premises. 1. Most remaining old-growth forests and traditional levels of local use must be strictly and permanently protected. 2. Only small and medium-scaled, locally controlled logging of old growth under an ecoforestry management plan that strives for ecological sustainability is environmentally acceptable and worthy of certification as green. 3. Landscapes and regions, not forest stands, are sustainably managed. Thus, locally controlled ecoforestry management must be accompanied by establishment of large, adjacent, strictly protected areas. 4. Until such time as forest certifiers direct their activities primarily to regenerating secondary forests and limit certification of old-growth forests to the above situation, their green claims to environmental sensitivity are not only meaningless, but they threaten the world's remaining large forest wildernesses and are not worthy of the support of forest ecologists, conservationists, or concerned consumers. There is nothing green about commercially scaled old-growth logging, regardless of the management practices employed. Forest.org calls upon Forestry Stewardship Council and their competitors to embrace rigorous conditions for harvesting old-growth in order to rightly earn their claim that buying their products helps protect the world's forests. Failure to do so will result in widespread campaigns to buy only old-growth free and locally produced ecoforestry products and to boycott all other forestry timbers and rainforest timber in particular. If left unchallenged on the point of certification of old-growth wildlands, the certification movement may well legitimize the final loss of large and contiguous natural forests from the face of the earth. Let this be a call to arms. Commercial old-growth logging is dead. As one can imagine, the environmental conglomerates are livid that their strategy to increase certified commercial logging of unlogged old-growth rainforests be questioned. Given how much many large groups have invested in the scheme, I would expect the thrilled denunciations and rhetoric to continue without answering the question, how can commercial logging of old growth be defended as a means to protect forests? In the interest of transparency and in an effort to progress the debate, Forest.org will be posting both critical and supportive replies to forest.org/certification. There's no triple W in there, it's just forest.org/certification. This campaign has only just begun. These concerns will be satisfactorily addressed, or certification will be permanently discredited as a greenwash ploy to access and log the world's remaining old-growth forests. And our commentary today was given to us by the Forest Conservation Portal at forest.org. And we thank them for that input.
Big Cypress National Preserve in Florida, home of the endangered Florida panther, is in the process of implementing a plan to manage off-road vehicles, ORVs, in the preserve. 729,000-acre preserve was set aside in 1974 to ensure the preservation, conservation, and protection of the natural, scenic, floral, and faunal recreation values of the Big Cypress watershed. The importance of this watershed to the Everglades National Park was a major consideration for its establishment. But off-road vehicles are tearing up the land or distributing the ecosystem all over. These heavy vehicles were scared nearly 30,000 miles of trails, devastating the park as they dig into the ground, often displacing mud down to organic limestone or bedrock, altering the natural landscape and vegetation. At the NPCA's urging, following of a lawsuit from Florida Biodiversity Project, National Park Service adopted a management plan that should greatly reduce off-road vehicle impacts in the park. However, the plan is subject to legal challenge, and enforcement may be difficult. Take action. Visit npca.org/take_action/action_alert/that thingy. It's at the npca.org. Send a message to your NPS director, Fran Minella, urging her to stand by this plan. That was Minella, possibly. And support the intelligent management of these potentially destructive vehicles. Please write her. Her address is the Honorable Fran Minella. That's Minella, director of the National Park Service, at 1849 C Street, NW, in Washington, D.C., 20240, or email at fran_manella@nps.gov.
Moving to Arizona, the Game and Fish is gunning for lions. Letters and calls are immediately needed to stop this deadly experiment. The Arizona Game and Fish Commission and Department are gearing up to kill up to 36 mountain lions near Saguaro, Apache, and Canyon Lakes on the Tonto National Forest as part of a preposterous plan to assess the impact of lion predation on bighorn sheep. The experiment has no merit and indeed is nothing more than a predator control scheme disguised as scientific research. For over 2 years, the department has been thwarted by animal protection groups, including the Animal Defense League of Arizona and the Fund for Animals, in its desire to start killing lions as it struggled to comply with federal laws. Now the department is believed to have completed its analysis of public comments on the project's draft environmental assessment and intends to start killing lions. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service must approve the plan before any lions can be killed and therefore represents the last hope for stopping this unnecessary experiment. Please make courteous calls and letters to Ms. Nancy Kaufman, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Regional Director in Albuquerque, and I'll give you that address in just a minute, to immediately stop the Game and Fish Department's lion-killing plan. Ask Ms. Kaufman to require the department to prepare an environmental impact statement to comprehensively evaluate the impacts of lion killing, to fully consider alternatives to such killing, and preferably to terminate the experiment due to the lack of scientific merit. When contacting Ms. Kaufman, please consider making the following points. There is no evidence to justify the killing of lions. The department's own data and reports demonstrate that drought and disease, mostly introduced by domestic sheep, have had far greater impact on bighorn sheep than lions. The drought has reduced bighorn habitat quality, while domestic sheep disease has been identified by department biologists as the number one concern for the survival of the bighorn sheep. Secondly, the department's lion scat analysis demonstrates that lions are killing more rabbits, javelina, and deer than bighorn sheep. There is no evidence that lions are responsible for the reported decline in bighorn sheep. 3. The department data on lion predation of bighorn is based on evidence from the Stewart Mountain area, which the department concedes is poor bighorn sheep habitat. If lions are killing bighorn in that area, such predation is entirely natural and to be expected. 4. The department's experiments cannot pass scientific muster. There is no control group, and the number of experimental variables is so large that no meaningful data will result. 5. The experiment is predator-controlled, poorly disguised as scientific research. Tell the Fish and Wildlife Service that the Arizona Department's plan is unnecessary, wasteful, and bad science. And 6, the department's anti-predator bias, blatant favoritism toward hunting, make it a poor candidate for managing this project. Here's the address to write to. Ms. Nancy Kaufman, K-A-U-F-A-F-M-A-N, Regional Director, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Region 2, Southwest Regional Office, 500 Gold Avenue Southwest, Room 3018, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87102. Boy, these people must have a real small office to have a huge title like that. Anyway, here goes again. Ms. Nancy Kaufman, Regional Director, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Region 2, Southwest Regional Office, 500 Gold Avenue Southwest, room 3018, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87102.
Albuquerque!
And if you don't want to write all that down, try her phone at 505-248-6282. That's 505-248-6282. And we thank the Animal Defense League of Arizona for that news.
Albuquerque should have made a left. And here we go with the Lomolo timber sale. We do need some comments, so feel free anytime to dial us up on the local Earth First Santa Cruz show. And here we go. The Umpqua National Forest is inviting you to comment through November 23rd on the dreaded Lomolo timber sale environmental impacts. The first threatened to log these spectacular ancient forests in the Diamond Lake Ranger District in 1999. Since over 200 people have signed petitions submitted scoping comments asking for these forests to be spared, in spite of the huge public opposition, the preferred alternative is to build 7.5 miles of new logging roads to haul away 5,700 log truck loads, 28.34 MMBF, whatever the heck that is, of MMBF.
That's million board feet.
I haven't built a house yet. Of old growth, the national forest from 1,619 acres, including converting clear cutting 450 acres to a new tree plantation for the timber industry to farm. Converting, that's what they say. Converting is really clear cutting. We're just converting it to like cow grazing land. And then after the cows eat all the grass, then it will have like a cool little desert and such. Hopefully we'll put a fake stream or something on it. But basically you guys catch what's going on here. This is a timber sale going on where they're trying to cut things down, sell the stuff. I mean, do we really want this to happen? Let's help give them a hand. They're with the Diamond Lake District Ranger John Quomet. Yeah, you need to speak with him to ask the Umpqua protection to go into effect. What's that right there? All right. I can't see with one eye, you know, blind in the other. So check out Diamond Lake District Ranger John Quamet, 2020 Tecote Ranger Station, Road Iliad Park in Oregon. That's IDLEYLD Park, Oregon.
Idlewild, perhaps?
Idlewild. There's no W. Or Yild, I don't know. A little wild myself. In Oregon, 97447. Okay, make sure you put your return address so he can get back to you. And you can also email Jouimet, Jouimet, at fs.fed.us to help stop the timber sale in the Umpqua a national forest. And it's also at www.umpquawatersheds.org. There's a dash between Umpqua and watersheds.
I believe that's Umpqua.
Umpqua. Umpqua. That's you.
That's where they're having that action camp is up near there.
Yeah. Ooh. I hope they have like pronunciation practices. I'm only 164th Indian. It doesn't just like kick in. here we go. It's www.umpqua-watersheds.org. UmpquaWatersheds.org. Okay? Help start that timber sale.
All right. The last free-roaming wild buffalo needs your stamp scoping comments now. Can you donate 20 minutes and a 34-cent stamp for the future generations of buffalo? Sure you can. The scoping process is the first step in the National Environmental Policy Act process of evaluating a term cattle grazing allotment. The Forest Service recognizes it's in its scoping letter that cattle grazing around the West Yellowstone area is controversial since it influences buffalo management practices. This is why an environmental impact statement is being prepared in compliance with NEPA. The Horse Butte Peninsula has been used for countless generations by the buffalo for winter forage and calving grounds. There has never been a NEPA review of these allotments before. The most important thing is to speak from your heart. Think about the situation and then suggest to your public servants what you would like them to consider, to research, and to look at when deciding what the best use of your public lands are. Here's a few things to ponder, and then write your own suggestions and let officials know what you would like them to do. All alternatives must address whether they are in the long-term interest of America's people as required by the Federal Land Management and Policy Act. All alternatives developed must analyze and assess the impacts of livestock grazing on native ecosystems and native wildlife health and their long-term viability. All alternatives must include a cost-benefit analysis of continuing to maintain livestock grazing at any level on the Horse Butte allotment. A specific alternative must be dedicated to analysis of a no-grazing decision for domestic livestock on the allotment. All alternatives must assess the impacts of domestic livestock grazing on the spread of noxious weeds and other invasive species, both plant and animal. All alternatives must address the impact of livestock grazing on any level of riparian area vegetative health and the health of native fisheries. The alternatives must address the impacts of livestock grazing on changes in fire frequency and fire ecology in general. The alternatives must address the impacts of permitted livestock to use bison winter range, bison health, bison reproduction, and bison population viabilities. Boy, there's a lot of these. The alternatives must address the impacts on the Endangered Species Act listed species such as bald eagles, wolves, lynx, grizzly bear, as well as on forest-designated sensitive or management indicator species such as goshawk and red squirrel. The alternatives must establish a maximum level of livestock grazing which is compatible with the preservation, restoration, and viability of all native ecosystems and species, and all alternatives that would continue the authorization of livestock grazing must provide the value of grazing fee receipts to the Gallatin Forest as compared with the cost to administer the proposed grazing permit. And that'll probably be a real losing proposition if they ever reveal that one. We can't change the current situation unless we speak on behalf of the buffalo. The only alternative that would help the buffalo is a no-grazing alternative. These forest lands must be used for native wildlife. The cattle have only been there since the 60s, and this is a small change that will save taxpayers literally millions of dollars in addition to the benefits to the ecosystem. Please write down your comments and send them by November 15th to Trish, T-R-I-S, Hoffman, Hebgen Ranger Lake District, that's H-E-B-G-E-N, Ranger Lake District, P.O. Box 520, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. That address again for your comments on the buffalo in the Horse Butte allotment is Tris Hoffman, Hebgen Ranger District, P.O. Box 520, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. And you can give her a call if you like at 406-823-6966. That's 406-823-6966. But it's really better to send a letter and do that before November 15th. Uncle Dennis says the buffalo needs your help. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for news and announcements here on Earth First Radio. If you'd like to get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzief@cruzio.com. That's cruzief@cruzio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio. We're at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And be sure to send all announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First Movement, subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address, P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. That's P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. If you want to listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer, you can do so every Thursday evening at 8 p.m. Go to www.microradio.net/FRSC and listen in. There's lots of great shows on free radio, so listen in anytime. You can always find Earth First Radio archived shows on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, and search for Earth First Radio. We're also available at www.la.indymedia.org. This is show number 164. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in Mega Studio A at Free Radio Santa Cruz, and tonight we have help from Jason. Thank you very much.
Gladly.
Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney off the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. Now we're going to listen to a song from David Rovics all about part of your male anatomy.
Everybody's getting cancer at a geometrical rate. Maybe it's something you drank or breathed. Maybe it's something you ate. Perhaps this doesn't concern you. Hey, we've all got to go sometime. But maybe I can tell you something to make you change your mind. The alligator dicks are shriveling up and soon they'll all be through. Yeah, the alligator dicks are shrinking fast and it will happen to you. It will happen to you, boys. It will happen to you. The alligator dicks are shriveling up and it will happen to you. They're an indicator species like canaries in the mine. They're the first ones to kick the bucket when things might otherwise seem fine. So let's be frank and honest as this situation begs. Boys, what are you gonna do about that thing between your legs? Cause the alligator dicks are shriveling up and soon they'll all be through. Yeah, the alligator dicks are shrinking fast and it will happen to you. It will happen to you, boys, it will happen to you. The alligator dicks are shriveling up and it will happen to you. Well, I'm not beating around the bush, I'm making you a promise. Say goodbye to Long Dong Silver, hello to Tiny Thomas. You can forget about Viagra. Boys, what I mean is it's all a matter of minutia when you've got a half-inch penis. Cause the alligator dicks are shriveling up and soon they'll all be through. Yeah, the alligator dicks are shrinking fast and it will happen to you. It will happen to you, boys, it will happen to you. The alligator dicks are shriveling up and it will happen to you. In the water, pesticides in the ground, radiation in the wind, yeah, there's poison all around. So if you care about your love life and that good old whoop-de-doo, you've got to stop pollution, boys, that's what I'm telling you. Cause the alligator dicks are shriveling up and soon they'll all be through. Yeah, the alligator dicks are shrinking fast and it will happen to you. It will happen to you, boys, it will happen to you. The alligator dicks are shriveling up and it will happen to you.